There's like some good ideas out there. So Michael Dell, a creator of Dell Computers, was the guy who said this. He went on to follow it up by saying, try to never be the smartest person in the room. If you are, go ahead and invite some smarter people to join you or just find yourself another room. Right? He was kind of pushing the point that it's essential to have people that are smarter than you. And chances are for most of you, that kind of made sense, right? I mean, we try to do that in many areas of our life, right? As we raise kids, the idea is that there are parents or teachers or other adults around them, right, that are smarter. When you go to school and you step into your classroom, the goal is that somebody there, hopefully in the front, right, is smarter than the rest of them. That's what makes a good learning environment. If no one is smarter, then I'm not sure what you're going to learn out of that. Hopefully that's why we have parents. That's why we do teaming sometimes at work, right? Because there's somebody that knows more about the IT side or somebody that knows more about the sales side or somebody that knows more about this side. And so when we work together, we can accomplish something better, right? They do teaming in hospitals because different doctors have different specialties and all those kinds of things because there's somebody who's smarter in some different areas than us. So we're kind of familiar and used to that idea. And chances are, if I were to ask you right now, who is the smartest person in the room? You probably wouldn't raise your hand for yourself. We have enough of a sense of humility about that to say, oh, there's a lot of smarts out there. But we would also say that that's a really hard question to answer. Because we understand there's different kinds of smarts, right? And if you were to say, who is the smartest person in the room about the Bible? I don't know, you might point at me. I have no idea if that's true or not. But then that begins to narrow things down. But if you ask who is the smartest person in the room about car maintenance, there would be many less fingers pointing at me. Legitimately so, right? There's a few things I do and a lot of it that I just pay someone else to do for me. That's how it works, right? So when we say who's the smartest person in the room, a lot of it is what are they being smart about, right? Because nobody has infinite perfect smartness, at least on a human level. And so we're always kind of questioning. So let me narrow down the question for you a little bit. Not who is the smartest about the Bible or about car maintenance. Who is the smartest person in the room about you and your life? Because really any other question is just about trivia. Who's the smartest person in the world or in the room about the Civil War, right? I mean, it'd be interesting to find out, but it wouldn't really make any difference in your life whatsoever. Who is the smartest person in the world about trigonometry? Again, fascinating, curious, interesting, but not life-changing. Who's the smartest person in the room about you and about your life and where you should go for the future? That's a meaningful question. And that's one that at least, without physically raising our hands, more of us are willing to say, I think that might be me. I think that out of everybody gathered in this room, I might know the best about myself and what my future ought to hold and what it ought to entail, right? So we're going to get to Isaiah in just a moment. I have one more question for you to kind of discuss together. Whenever it is that you come and say, I need to get some wisdom or insight, when are you most likely to ask? When you ask for help for something, right? When are you the most likely to do that? What draws you into saying, hey, I think I might need some help in this area. I might need some wisdom or insight. So again, turn to people around you and just kind of share and say, hey, these are things that would make me more likely to ask for help. To ask for somebody to give me some assistance along the way. There's probably a richness to this question for us as individuals that would be great to kind of examine. Like, it would be good for you to know, what does it need to be there for me to ask for help for something? What's kind of an important part of those things? Isaiah, though, gives us some clues. So I invite you to open your Bible to Isaiah 55. Hopefully you brought one with you from home. That's kind of your own personal one you can mark up. If you don't have that one, there's some in the pews. You can grab one of those out there and feel free to mark in that one too. The more we engage with the Word of God, the better things are for us. So Isaiah 55, we had a reading from the end of the chapter, but the whole chapter together is kind of this cool little nugget. So we're going to back up a little bit and take a look at verse 2. This is one of the reasons why I love this book more than any other in the Bible. They're all really good books in the Bible, but this one is really profound. Isaiah writes in Isaiah 55, 2, the reason why we ask for help. He says, "Why spend money on what is not bread, and your labor on what does not satisfy?" Whenever something doesn't satisfy, we ask for help. That's maybe a really simplistic answer, but I think it's a really broad one that encompasses all of us. We may have some unique individual things about what that satisfaction is that kind of leads us in different directions. Some guys don't ask for directions because it isn't very satisfying to need to find. They would rather find it on their own. It's more satisfying for them to conquer the direction thing on their own than to ask for help, right? So that's why there's variances in that. But I think at the core for all of us, when something is deeply unsatisfying, then we begin to say, I need some help to get back to this place of satisfaction. I need to find those things. Isaiah kind of points it really, really boldly. He says, you're spending money on things that aren't bread. You're hungry. You're desperately hungry. Why in the world, when you have money, would you buy something that isn't food? And why would you exert so much labor and effort in your life over things that ultimately do not satisfy you? Right? So here are those questions coming back when you do need help for satisfaction. And all of us, honestly, right now, because we live in this human experience, would be able to say, yeah, I do need more satisfaction in my life than I have. I haven't tapped out all the satisfaction that there is. There's places in my life that are missing that. And I would love to have that. So then the question is, where's a voice that we can begin to trust? And we did that a little bit with the kids. Aaron did a great job on that. You know, saying, here's the voices that I know that I can trust. And Isaiah kind of charts out for us in chapter 55, what are the voices that we can listen to that are trustworthy for us? Because there's always a ton of voices around us that we can understand and listen to. And there's a few things that identify the ones that are trustworthy. So following up in Isaiah, in the end of verse 2, he says, "Listen, listen to me and eat what is good, and your soul will delight in the richest of fare. Give ear and come to me, hear me that your soul might live," in the beginning of verse 3. So this invitation from God is saying, come and listen to me. And why? Why should you listen to me out of all of the other voices there? What is God saying in there? He's saying, I want you to delight in good food. I want your soul to live. I want to give you what is good. And so the first thing that I think is important when we look for a voice we want to listen to is do they want good for me? Right? Do they have a positive intent in my life? Do they desire to bring good things into my life? If there's somebody who persistently has shown they don't, it doesn't matter how smart they may be about a lot of things, we're not going to listen to them. Right? So hopefully this is what a role of a parent is. And I realize not every parent is perfect and some do an absolutely horrific job. But on the large scale of things, the general scale of things, most times you interact with your parent, when they look at you as a child, they make decisions because they want good in your life. It is the rare parent that actually wants to wound or hurt a child, and that is wrong and evil. But in the general sense, this is what it is, right? And this is why, for the general sense, most children should listen to parents. They may not have perfect knowledge, but their heart is in the right place. And when they look at you from whatever their experience and understanding is, they say, I want good for you. And as best as I know, this is how good will come into your life. Right, so we want to listen for voices that are looking to seek good in our life and to do valuable and positive things for us. In verse 4 then, Isaiah goes on to say, "See, I've made this individual a witness to the people, a leader and commander of the peoples. Surely you will summon nations you know not, and nations that do not know you will hasten to you." So here he is describing this love he's promised to David at the end of verse 3, and how he made David a witness to peoples, this leader and commander of others. So he's saying, hey, if you don't trust me right now, look at what I've done in the lives of others. And so this whole book is kind of his track record, right? This is what God has done in the life of others. We shared some earlier on this Sunday, last Sunday, and the Sundays to come. This is God's track record with this congregation. We share his stories so that we can see this is God's track record with others, which is valuable for us, which is why you trust people when you know them longer than you do when you just meet them for the first time. You don't have any track record to go on. You don't know what they've done in other people's lives. It's all hearsay. When you've seen, not just heard, but seen how somebody has acted in the life of others time and time and time again, then you develop this really strong track record out of that. So, Randy, I'm just going to call you out at this moment because you've been coaching cross country at Clackamas for how long?
14 years.
And hundreds and hundreds of kids that have gone through that program with you. And when I interact with kids that have gone on beyond, and even those that are there right now, consistently over and over again, track is a great pun right here, but they speak of your love for them as kids, of your qualities as a coach, of your encouragement, of just the team aspect, of how much fun they have on those things. Right, so that's not one kid at one time on the first practice that Randy had. That's 14 years of Randy leading cross country at Clackamas High School. That's a solid track record, right? So I think that we could say, like, if you had a kid that was thinking about cross country, you could say, hey, I think you might be able to trust that coach. I think he knows what he's doing. I think he'll keep you safe. I think he'll challenge you. It'll be a great, positive environment. He's going to build you up on the inside as well as the outside, right? Because there's a track record that exists. God has done a little bit more than Randy has, a little bit more than 14 years worth of experience and a broader selection of people. And so that challenge, though, with all people is what's your track record? And then with God, too, like, he's got a really broad base of one that's valuable to look at and kind of examine. And then finally, in verse 5, he goes back to you. He says, here's what I did for David. Check it out. You can read about it if you want to. It's really good stuff. Surely then you will summon nations that you don't know. Nations that don't know you are going to hasten to you. So there is this glory that will come to you as well because of the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, for he has endowed you with what? Splendor. So that goes back to the positive intent, because that's honestly more positive than most of us even hope for in our lives. Most of us aren't even seeking a life with splendor, right? We're happy just to kind of make it here and there. But that goes back again to where we were at the beginning. God's not satisfied with good enough. He says, I've got a bigger goal in mind than most of you ever have imagined. And it is this splendor. And so here is a God who has not only a positive intent and a good track record, but who comes and says, you can listen to my voice and hear it because I have the power to do something incredible. Bigger than just you. Right? So there's a difference in a voice that can speak and you have to do it all yourself. And a voice that can speak and do some of that work for you. Right? If you've got an outside consultant when you're trying to boost your sales numbers, and he comes in and says, hey, here's what I know from my positive intent for you because you're paying me, and here's what I know from my track record, what you ought to do, then like, oh, okay, that's great. But if your boss comes to you and says, I've got this great plan, this is where I think things ought to be, I've laid this out, I've already got these contacts for you, they are ready to buy. Whoa, that's a little different story, right? That's pretty nice, because here's a guy who's already got things lined up, who's got a power behind things. And we listen to people that have a power to do, not just the wisdom to speak. And so we've got a God that on these three levels nails those things perfectly. You will never find an individual who has better positive intent for you than God. Ever. You won't find a stronger track record than God. And that's being in full honesty, right? God doesn't hide stuff. He'll tell you, hey, this is what I did with Abraham when I asked him to sacrifice his son. This is what I did with Job when I stripped everything away from him. So he's not hiding things, right? And the track record maybe is not as pure as you'd wish it was, but it's broad-based, and you get a clear sense of where he is and what he's doing. And you won't find any voice out there that has more power to back up what is asked to be accomplished. Right? This is the ending part of the reading that we have when God says that, hey, my word is like this rain that falls down on the seed. It doesn't finish until it rises up and produces its food and sustains life around it. God's words are not just ideas or theories or proposals or suggestions. They are power. And when you engage with them, there's a power that begins to flow out of you as well. It is a tremendous and amazing kind of thing. And so from these three things alone, you would say, man, we ought to listen to this voice of God, right? Hands down, smartest guy in the room, best intent for us, strong track record, amazing power behind us. Everything lines up that we say, man, I ought to be in that book a lot. I ought to be using it. I ought to be relating to it. I ought to be gaining everything I can out of it. There are a counter three, though, that are some of the reasons why we slow ourselves down a bit when we listen to the voice of God. Because the reality is, even though God's voice is there for us to read and understand, we use it maybe less than we should, or less vigorously than we should as well. So look in verse 8, some of the readings that we had, and we'll see the first reason why it's harder than to listen to God. My thoughts are not what? Yeah. So the thing is, the people we like to listen to the most are those that think the same way that we do, right? That think just like me. We love advice like that. We love it when somebody says, you're exactly right, and that's exactly how I think too. And we have had, from the very beginning of time, a tendency to want to associate and connect to the people that think the same way we do. Right? That's why it made it really easy for Adam to hang out with Eve, because kind of in the back of his mind, he's like, I'd kind of like to try that fruit too. So I'd rather be on your side in the fruit trying side than on God's side on the, hey, I'm going to hold to this rule thing, and we follow it through. And in our society today, it gets even harder for us. We used to have to live in communities where you'd have to kind of talk to everybody around you because there wasn't really anywhere else to go. And now we have all these virtual communities, so you don't even have to talk to the people that live next to you in houses. You don't have to talk to other kids in school. And you can just choose the subsection of society that you want to engage with. And you can narrow it down so you can only talk to people that agree with you politically or theologically or whatever other lee you might want to put out there, right? And you can narrow it down so everybody agrees with me, because we like that. It seems more clear, more safe, more black and white, all those things. But God blows that up when he says, my thoughts are not what? So hands down, if you're going to let him speak into your life, he's not going to think like you think. He just isn't. And that will endlessly ruffle feathers. I'm pretty sure that the rest of our lives together, that will frustrate us, because there's a humility that gets breathed into us. Because when there's a difference of opinion, then you've got to wrestle through that and figure out, where does the truth lie? And within people, you might end up being the winner, but with you and God, you can wrestle as long as you want, right? Jacob did it all night long, threw out his hip, walked with a limp the rest of his life. You can wrestle with God for 20 years if you want to. You can do it for 40 years if you want to. But at the end, his ways are higher than your ways, and his thoughts are higher than your thoughts. And so there is a surrender. This is, man, the great biblical truth. There is a surrender for every person before God. There's no question whether knees will bow before him. It's just a matter of time. When will your knees bow? Are they going to bow now? Are they going to bow later on in your life? Are they going to bow when God comes back at some moment? And you realize, yeah, your thoughts are higher than mine. Your ways are higher than mine too. The other reason we don't listen to God is beyond just the fact that he thinks differently. The way that he thinks doesn't even make sense to us at all. So it's one thing if someone thinks differently and you're like, oh, now that I think about it, that makes perfect sense to me. There's some things God does that does that, but there's a whole lot that don't make sense at all. First verse of the chapter comes to play there, right? Come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. You who have don't money, come buy. How can I buy if I don't have money? That doesn't make any sense. And here is that grace of God that challenges us again. On so many levels, God doesn't make sense. But there's one, right? When he says, hey, come and buy righteousness when you have nothing to pay for it for. And we want to be able to provide something. But God not only thinks differently than we do, he thinks in ways that don't even make sense. So we can't even logically get there at times. And there is this place of trust. Which is hard, right? For young kids, it's there. Because there's so much about the world that they can't get, that they just have to trust mom and dad, right? But as we get older, that trust of them diminishes, in part because we understand, man, they're just as human as I am, and they mess up a lot, right? I get that that changes. But as we grow older, then we sometimes change that relationship with God and think that he's maybe as flawed as our parents are, when in reality he's not. And even though you still can't understand him when you're 49 or 23 or 67 or whatever age you are, just because he doesn't make sense doesn't mean he's not wiser and smarter and having a better avenue and better path for you. Finally, in verse 7, we like to listen to people that make us feel good about ourselves. That's true as well. The voices that we most appreciate are the ones that think just like us, that say things that make sense to us. Man, I love what you're saying. That makes total sense to me. And ones that make us feel good about us. Right? Nobody likes the voice that comes back and says, you were wrong about this. Nobody likes it when a boss does that, when a teacher does that, when a parent does that, when a pastor does that, when anybody does that. Right, we like the voices that say, well done, you nailed it, great job, amazing, incredible, gold star, wow, whatever else you're going to put at the top of the paper, right? But here is God in verse 7 saying, let the wicked forsake his way, the evil man his thoughts. Let him turn to the Lord, he will have mercy, and to our God, for he will freely pardon. So it's not even that God's angry and impressive in any way. He's like, come, and I'm going to give you mercy. I'm going to remove all that past. But by the way, the reason for you coming is that you're wicked. And man, enough of that, and we begin to kind of plug our ears too and say, I don't want to hear about my failures and my weaknesses. I don't want to be stretched to think in different ways that are comfortable or hard for me to grasp. And so we begin to diminish that voice of God in our lives. But here is this call from Isaiah that says there is a better voice for you than just the one inside your own head. There is a smarter individual about your own life and about what your future should hold than yourself. And he's here available for you to listen to. What would it look like then for you to hear that? So verse 11 says, so this is my word that goes out of my mouth. It does not return to me empty, but accomplishes what I desire and achieves the purpose for which I sent it. How do you actively receive that word? How do you kind of move past those barriers that we have and get back to that first part that says, here's a God of good intent, a God with a great track record, a God with incredible power. I need to hear what he says. Right? So in your bulletin, there's the connection card that lists some next steps. So there's four. This is not a limitation on those things. It's kind of some basic ones. So I want to invite you to look at that. If you are already passed on some of these things, then we can talk a little bit about what some other things might be. So a lot of these things are meant to be pretty simple and something that you could say, hey, this week I could begin to do this, right? So the first one is just to say, hey, I want to bring my Bible to worship each week, right? If I'm going to wear clothes to worship each week, if I'm going to brush my hair or comb it before worship each week, I can find where my Bible is, and I can bring it with me every week, and I can open it up when we're in worship together, and I can begin to read out of my Bible and begin to engage at least at that level. So it gets a little bit personal. That's not going to overwhelm any one of you, right? You miss it for a week, just try to remember the next week, right? But it's a goal that says, I want that with me. So I'm not just hearing it out there, that I'm engaged as much as I can, saying, how does that find its way into my life? I want to read the scriptures the week beforehand to prepare. So every week we'll tell you where we're headed next week and what scriptures are. In this series, we're kind of picking around different places in the Bible, but after this, we'll just get to Colossians, and we'll just read straight through the thing, so it won't be that difficult to find. But just to say, hey, in the week beforehand, right, you had about 6 or 7 verses to read. It wasn't overwhelming. Sometimes it's a chapter, still not too much, but I want to read it before, because I want to let God begin to speak into my life. If he's the smartest person in the room, then I want to listen, and I can't listen if it's not there. Maybe beyond that, I want to read my Bible at least 3 times each week. Wherever I am in my schedule, maybe I can't get it every day, maybe that's too hard for me, but I'm going to aim for 3 and be accountable at least here before God. Will you remind me that at least 3 days out of the week? And again, you can make that any level you want to. If you want to press it into 6 or 7, you want to do more than that, whatever it is that God's leading you, that's fine. These are just ideas for you. The final one is just, I need some help to figure out how to use that. Maybe I could say I'm going to read it, but I would have no idea where to read or what to do when I read it or how to go around those things. So we're happy to kind of help you figure those things out. Maybe you're looking for something even bigger than that. Like, I've read a lot of it, and I'm kind of just stuck. I'm not sure I'm getting much out of it. How do I begin to use that in a way that allows me to really hear? It's kind of a catch-all place. If you've got some other idea that's roaming around in your head, maybe I want to memorize some portion of it, I want to read through the Bible in a year, I want to do whatever else it might be, that's not about you proclaiming anything out of your own wisdom. That's about God kind of laying something on your heart and saying, I want you to hear my voice, because I am the wisest, smartest person in the room about your life. And so I want to encourage you too. To kind of begin to go through your life with that understanding in the background. That when you have a disagreement with your spouse, that you can just remember that I'm not the smartest person in the room right now about my marriage. That when you've got struggles at work, that you can just remember I am not the smartest person in my office or my business or whatever right now. But if you're wrestling in school, wherever else it might be, you got relationship stuff, wherever you wander and find yourself, you're looking down at your finances and trying to figure out how all this is going to come together, just to pause and remember, I am not the smartest person in the room right now about my finances. And just to come back again and again to that place that there is someone who's here ready to speak. With great love, with an amazing track record, with incredible power. I invite you to pray with me. Worship team, you can come forward. God, I would hope that most of us here have at least at one moment tasted of your goodness and your track record and your power. But we've probably all also tasted of the fact that you just think differently than we do. And you think in risky ways when we want to be safe, and you think in trusting ways when we'd rather just grab hold. And so, God, I ask that you'd begin to release our hearts to listen to you. Remind us, Father, wherever we are this week, that there is someone smarter in the room with us all the time. And I pray that you would begin to carve out more and more space in our lives that we can listen to that smart one, that we can begin to engage with you, and that we can begin to give you, God, our full attention.